kick those New Year's resolutions into gear at Old Navy with up to 50% off all Old Navy active right now. All your favorite activewear is on sale, from hoodies to sweatshirts to the new Elevate legging with power soft fabric. All Old Navy active for the family is up to 50% off, with styles starting at just $8 for adults, $6 for kids. But you better get moving. This deal won't last long. It ends soon at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 1-2 to 1-9. Excludes in-store clearance.
This episode is brought to you by Podbean. Are you looking to start your own podcast? Podbean is an easy and powerful way to start podcasting. We give you all of the tools you need for a successful podcast, and there's no difficult technology to learn. Sign up today for a free Podbean account at www.podbean.com. That's P-O-D-B-E-A-N.com.
For over 30 years, journalist Chauncey Bailey devoted his career to reporting on news in the Black community. Sometimes his stories centered around triumphs and milestones, and other times he reported on crime, scandal, and corruption. Unfortunately, in this week's Crime File, I will be covering how Chauncey became the subject instead of the author of a major news headline. Hi, I'm your host Gigi. Welcome back to Noir True Crime Files. It was a cool summer morning in Oakland, California, when Chauncey Bailey left his apartment on August 2, 2007. Chauncey's routine each day was to wake up and get ready at 6:30 a.m. and walk for about 20 minutes to work. Along the way, Chauncey would always stop for breakfast at the local McDonald's. This particular morning shouldn't have been any different, but what Chauncey didn't know was that a killer was tracing his every move. When he arrived to the McDonald's on 14th Street, Chauncey ordered his breakfast and took a few minutes to eat. Parked on a cross street a few feet away was a white van, and the person inside was waiting on Chauncey. When he was done with his breakfast, Chauncey exited the McDonald's and managed to walk for about a block and a half when a masked gunman approached him with a loaded shotgun in his hands. The killer aimed the gun and began shooting. Chauncey fell to the ground, dying instantly. His killer ran back to the white van and sped away. When police arrived at the cross streets of 14th and Alice, they found Chauncey's body lying on the sidewalk. Even though his wallet was on him, officers were able to identify Chauncey rather quickly. He was a familiar figure in Oakland thanks to his work at the Oakland Post, and he interacted with city officials and law enforcement on a regular basis. After a quick examination of Chauncey's body, it appeared that he had been shot execution style. It was later confirmed that he had been shot a total of 3 times, 2 of the bullets hitting him in the back and 1 in the head. 3 12-gauge shotgun rounds were found at the scene and were taken into evidence. When they interviewed witnesses, detectives were able to gather that a masked gunman had run up to Chauncey and started shooting him at close range. One witness who asked not to be identified claimed that he attempted to walk over to Chauncey as he was being confronted by the gunman. The witness stopped in his tracks when he saw the shotgun and claimed that he heard Chauncey say, "Please don't kill me." After detectives were done speaking with witnesses, they began to theorize over motives. They quickly ruled out robbery since Chauncey's wallet, cell phone, and a portable video camera were found in his possession. Perhaps Chauncey's death had something to do with his work at the Post. No one else at the crime scene had been harmed, so it seemed plausible that Chauncey had been targeted. Chauncey Wendell Bailey Jr. was born on October 20, 1949, in Oakland, California. He was raised in a Catholic family and was one of five children. In 1960, the Bailey family moved to a predominantly white suburb in the neighboring city of Hayward. For a while, they were the only black family on the block. Eventually, other black families also moved to Hayward during a suburban migration. When he was in middle school, Chauncey had an after-school paper route with the Hayward Daily Review. One day, a white customer called to complain about him because they didn't want a black boy delivering their papers. It was then that Chauncey decided he wanted to be a journalist. He became determined to break racial barriers through printed words and reportedly said that, quote, people would have to read what he wrote, whether they were black or white. Chauncey went on to Hayward High School and joined the school newspaper. After he graduated, he attended Merritt Community College and received his associate's degree. In 1972, Chauncey graduated with a bachelor's degree in journalism from San Jose University. While he was still in college, he began his journalism career writing for the Oakland Post and also worked as an on-air reporter for the local news station, KNTV. For the next 10 years, Chauncey bounced around for work, living in Hartford, Connecticut, Chicago, Illinois, and Washington, D.C., until he landed in Detroit, Michigan in 1982. Chauncey worked as a reporter and columnist for the Detroit News and mainly covered the city's government and black community. Chauncey was described by his former boss, James Veasley, as having an infectious personality, and Veasley admitted that he was really impressed with Chauncey and how quickly he learned about Detroit and how he had built relationships with the local residents. Being a reporter in the 1980s was historically and socially significant for Chauncey because he was a part of an emerging group of black male journalists working at predominantly white daily newspapers. This generation of black journalists could still remember the Jim Crow era as well as the civil rights movement, so their presence in the newsroom was a sign of how times were changing in terms of diversity and representation in the news media. Chauncey was passionate about his work and was typically the first and last reporter in the newsroom. He was known to be assertive and fiery. However, he could be very friendly, and he often encouraged local residents to read by passing out newspapers when he rode the Metro bus to work. Chauncey returned to Oakland in the early 90s. He worked briefly as a newscaster at KDIA Radio, then left for the Oakland Tribune in 1993. For the next 12 years, he reported on Oakland's black community while simultaneously working as a news director and interviewer on Soul Beat Television, a local public access TV station. Chauncey interviewed a variety of guests on air, including black business owners, politicians, and victims of racist attacks. In 2003, Chauncey attempted to buy Soul Beat, but was unsuccessful in securing investors who were willing to meet the $2.5 million asking price. Chauncey ended up leaving Soul Beat soon after the deal fell through and the channel was canceled by Comcast later that year. The failed business venture did not deter Chauncey from wanting his own television channel, and a year later, he was successful in making his dream a reality. In December of 2004, Chauncey launched the cable channel Our TV with his business partner and financier, Leonard Stevens. Our TV, which stands for Opportunities in Urban Renaissance, currently airs on Oakland Xfinity channels 26 and 78 in Oakland, as well as neighboring cities Piedmont, Emeryville, Richmond, and Berkeley. Life was good for Chauncey Bailey in 2007. In June, he was promoted to editor-in-chief at the Oakland Post, the place where his career had begun. He had rejoined the paper 2 years prior after working for a few years as a freelancer. Chauncey was also newly engaged to his fiancée, Deborah Odua, and the couple were considering having a baby. Chauncey was already a father to his 12-year-old son, Chauncey III. After 25 years, he had recently reconciled with his own father and had taken him and his son on a cruise a few months prior. In July, Chauncey was honored at the 12th Annual African American Excellence in Business Awards and Scholarship Gala. Chauncey had also written a screenplay called Love Ain't Easy and was in talks with Lionsgate Entertainment to turn it into a film. He would have begun casting calls for the lead actress for the film when, sadly, a month later, he was gunned down. He was only 57 years old. News of Chauncey's death reached the Oakland Post later that morning around 9 a.m. The Post's publisher, Paul Cobb, had been expecting Chauncey that morning for a meeting. He had actually heard the ambulance and police sirens heading in the direction of where Chauncey was found, but didn't think much of it. Downtown Oakland was known to be a bit hectic at times, so the sounds of sirens wasn't uncommon. Just when Cobb was starting to wonder where Chauncey was, he received a call from Oakland police with the sad news about Chauncey's death. Chauncey and Cobb were colleagues, but Cobb also considered them to be friends. He would later say that Chauncey's death was like losing a brother. When detectives interviewed Cobb, he explained that Chauncey was in a good place in his life and how the night before, they were discussing how pleased they were with the direction the paper was going in. When detectives asked if Chauncey had any enemies, Cobb admitted that they both had received threats over the years, but nothing had come of them, at least until now. Detectives pressed him for more information, and Cobb finally admitted that perhaps Chauncey's murder may have been in connection to a story he had been working on. Some weeks back, Chauncey had been investigating claims against a local business called Your Black Muslim Bakery and had intentions on releasing an expose on them. The bakery was a staple in the community, but it had been plagued with issues and linked to several controversies since the mid-1990s. The business was on the verge of bankruptcy, but that wasn't the main reason behind Chauncey's investigation. The bakery's CEO and employees had allegedly been involved in criminal activity, and Chauncey's article would have exposed that, as well as details about the bakery's finances. Cobb felt that because they were not able to verify key details for the article, that it shouldn't be published. Chauncey had written about the business before, but this article would have put the bakery under further scrutiny in the public eye. Detectives were not at all surprised to hear about the bakery's possible involvement in Chauncey's death. In fact, the Oakland Police Department had also been conducting their own investigation into the bakery and their alleged criminal activities over the last few months. The next morning at 5 a.m., 200 armed Oakland officers and SWAT team closed off several blocks of San Pablo Avenue. They proceeded to break down the doors of Your Black Muslim Bakery, as well as other homes and businesses that were owned by the bakery. Using smoke grenades, officers were able to disorient the residents who were living in the bakery as they stormed through. In the midst of the chaotic bust, an officer spotted a man throwing a shotgun out of a nearby window. The man, who detectives later identified as Devondre Broussard, was taken into custody. Six other individuals, including the bakery CEO, Yusuf Bey IV, were taken into custody as well. The shotgun was retrieved and handed over to the forensics team for testing. Other evidence recovered from the raids included spent ammunition, which was found on the rooftop of the bakery, and a shotgun that was hidden in a closet of a home across the street from the bakery. Down at the station, Sergeant Derwin Longmire and Sergeant Lou Cruz interviewed Broussard for several hours. The 19-year-old adamantly denied having any involvement in Chauncey's murder and refused to answer questions. At some point, Yusuf IV was allowed to visit Broussard in the interrogation room, alone. Conveniently enough, there were no microphones or video equipment inside the room to record the conversation. When Sergeants Longmire and Cruz returned to question Broussard further, his attitude had completely changed and he was now telling a different story. Through tears, Broussard confessed to murdering Chauncey Bailey, stating that he had acted alone. On the morning of the murder, Broussard claimed that he was high on crack cocaine when he began his search for Chauncey Bailey. He drove to the Tribune Tower and waited before he realized that Chauncey had not yet arrived to work. Broussard then said he followed a route he assumed Chauncey would take to work, and that's when he found him going into the McDonald's on 14th Street. Broussard waited for him, and when he saw Chauncey leave the McDonald's, he walked up to Chauncey and began shooting. Broussard told the sergeants that he was upset about past articles that had been written about the bakery and was worried about future articles that may be coming out. Broussard said he acted as a, quote, strong soldier on the bakery's behalf when he killed Chauncey. Sergeants Longmire and Cruz didn't believe that Broussard had acted alone, but since he was refusing to name anyone else, they booked him on suspicion of murder and held him in jail without bail. On August 7, 2007, Broussard was formally charged with murder and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Devondre Broussard was born on October 11, 1987, in San Francisco, California, to Andre Dixon and Eric Broussard. Andre and Eric were young parents when they had Devondre, both in their early 20s at the time of his birth. Eric wasn't in the picture for long, and when Devondre was 10 months old, Andre was arrested and sent to prison on charges of drug possession with intent to sell. This began a cycle of Devondre being in and out of foster care during his childhood. Andre was released from prison in 1990, but was arrested again in either 1995 or 1996, but again for certain in 1999. After he was taken in by his stepfather, Marcus Calloway, Devondre had a few years of stability and began to show promise in school. His sophomore year of high school, Devondre joined the chess club and won an investment portfolio competition hosted through UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business. He earned a grand prize of a $100 savings bond. Devondre had also been a part of the Human Services and Health Academy, which helped students with an interest in pursuing careers in the medical field, education, and law enforcement. Devondre had shared with his stepfather that he wanted to be a police officer, but his plans changed when he dropped out of school in the 11th grade. In 2002, Andre was released from prison again, and Devondre decided to go live with her. Soon after, he began getting into trouble. Devondre began running away from home, and by March of 2005, the 17-year-old had been convicted of second-degree robbery in juvenile court. On Halloween night 2005, Devondre and three of his friends brutally assaulted and robbed a college student named Christopher Hall. While riding on a train, the teenagers jumped Hall and stole his wallet and iPod. The crime was captured on train cameras and the boys were caught a short while later. Hall suffered damage to his eyes and had a fractured nose as a result of the attack. Devondre was charged as an adult for robbery, battery, and assault with a deadly weapon. He was sentenced to a year in county jail with credit for time served. In the midst of Devondre's troubles, Andre was arrested twice, once in 2005 and another time in 2006 after police discovered crack, heroin, and a .22 caliber handgun in her home. She was sent back to state prison and released in 2007. While he was in jail, Devondre reconnected with his childhood friend, Richard Lewis, who had recently changed his name to Rakim Khalil Bey. The day before his release, Rakim asked Devondre what his plans were. Devondre truly had no plans, but he knew he wanted to stay out of trouble. Rakim told Devondre about Your Black Muslim Bakery and encouraged him to find work there when he got out. Devondre was not Muslim, but he liked the idea of having a steady income and staying out of trouble. Everyone, including Devondre's father and his probation officer, agreed that this was a good idea and that the bakery would help Devondre to change his life around. Devondre made contact with bakery CEO Yusuf Bey IV soon after his release, and he was quickly welcomed into the bakery. He was hired as a cook and handyman and was housed in an apartment across the street. After a few months, Devondre gained Bay's trust, which was a big deal considering how often Bay lectured bakery employees about loyalty and sacrifice. Bay would also speak on self-empowerment and Black pride, which Broussard really enjoyed hearing about. Devondre, along with other bakery employees, didn't come from the best background, so it was inspiring to listen to Bay's messages. It gave them hope. However, these hopeful messages would be used to remind employees of a bigger picture when their checks were late or short. Bay would constantly remind staff that they were working for a cause, that being at the bakery was more than a job. Sometimes Devondre would get paid in cash and would be told to keep quiet about it. It made him feel special, as if he was close to Bay. Devondre's eagerness to please Bay did not go unnoticed, and one night in December 2006, Devondre's loyalty would be put to the test for the first time. Bay ordered Devondre and a few other bakery employees to carry out a mission for him. According to Devondre, Bay had told them that his ex-girlfriend had come to him crying about her current boyfriend. In retaliation, he wanted the group to shoot up the man's car as a way of sending him a message. Devondre openly expressed that he disagreed with how Bay was choosing to handle the situation, but he completed the mission anyway. A month after the car shootout, Devondre started to become unsatisfied with his living situation and his job at the bakery. The long hours he worked never seemed to match his pay, and his apartment was barely livable because it had no electricity or hot water. After he was threatened by a member of the bakery security team, Broussard quit. He struggled to find stable work elsewhere, and he would go back and forth to the bakery two more times before officially rejoining in June of 2007. Bay knew that Devondre was having a hard time finding work since leaving the bakery and promised him pay and better treatment if he returned. Devondre would later admit that he knew Bay was manipulating him, but he willingly fell back into his trap. Soon after Devondre returned to the bakery, he was given another mission. Bay wanted him to kill the uncle of the man who murdered his brother Antar. The man's name was Odell Roberson. Roberson was homeless and had passed by the bakery one day asking for food. Devondre gave Roberson a free fish sandwich, and when Roberson left, Bay pointed him out and explained to Devondre who he was. Bay allegedly ordered Devondre to, quote, take him out. Devondre found Roberson on the evening of July 7, 2007, and lured him near the Golden Gate Recreation Center, which is about 3 minutes away from the bakery. Devondre shot 8 to 10 rounds into Roberson at close range and fled the scene. Roberson's body was found the next morning, but police were unable to make any connections in his case. It quickly went cold and was classified as another random Oakland homicide. Devondre would later explain Roberson's death as, "I was following orders, that's all. He told me to do something and then I just followed through." Bay's next mission for Devondre is what he claims landed him back in jail. On August 16th, through a statement from his lawyer, LaRue Grimm, Devondre denied killing Chauncey Bailey. He was now claiming that he was taking the fall for a, quote, high-ranking person from the bakery. That person was Yusuf Bey IV. Thank you for joining me on part one of this episode of Noir True Crime Files. This episode was researched, written, and edited by me. I found the majority of my research from the Chauncey Bailey Project and the San Francisco Gate. Those links can be found in the show notes. NTCF Podcast is available on all major streaming platforms such as Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play. Please be sure to like, comment, and rate the show on whichever platform you are listening on. Also, if you'd like to share your opinions and overall thoughts about this case, you can reach out to me on Twitter and Instagram at NTCF Podcast. Please join me next week for part two of this crime file. Until then, goodbye for now.
This episode is brought to you by Podbean Live. Podbean Livestream is a unique platform for turning your podcast production into a live show. It's open to any podcaster on any hosting site. Easily invite multiple co-hosts and guests to join your live stream, earn money from live show ticket sales and get listener rewards, and engage your audience in new and exciting ways. Ready to get started? Sign up today at www.podbean.com/live. That's podbean.com/live.